When it comes to creating truly special shared experiences with XR, there are probably very few people in the world who have thought about it as deeply as the guests in this episode. They take us on a hike through the forest into an almost mythical world centered around the Tree of Life.
For us, I think the technology is not about creating futuristic stuff that has nothing to do with our everyday reality. It's more about recreating this amazement for what is reality.
We want to connect people. There's no winning. There's nobody who can, you know, like celebrate that they're the winner and the others are the losers.
Hi and welcome back to New Realities, the podcast by 1E9 and XR Bavaria. In this podcast, we introduce you to new realities, projects, ideas, concepts and products in virtual, augmented and mixed reality, or simply put, in extended reality. My name is Wolfgang Kerler, I'm editor-in-chief of 1E9, and today's guests are two artists who work together in a very unique way. Robert and Frank, or Frank and Robert, are a Belgian artist duo. Their work includes visual art, performance, film, installation, theater, and, of course, XR. They grew up together and later studied visual arts together in Ghent, and since then, they have built a creative practice that mixes humor, strong images, and big ideas. Their work often invites people to slow down, to look closer and ask questions and to connect with each other. And I'm very happy to welcome Robert and Frank to the podcast. Frank and Robert, welcome to New Realities Podcast. Great to have you on our show.
Hello.
Yo, yo, yo.
Now, I guess as we are an XR podcast, there are many people out there who already know your work. But before we dive deeper into some of your projects, for those who may not know you yet, how would you describe what you do? Because, you know, there are some terms that describe your work, like XR, immersive theater, participation art. And you also use a name called Table Dialogues. And I guess if you just hear those words, people might imagine very different things. So maybe from your own words, how would you describe what you do?
We are, I think we like to make stuff. So we're makers and we're also storytellers who like to work with people.
Yes, we like to collaborate. We are an art duo since the very, very beginning. So I think that's really at the core of what we do. That it's not about one individual, it's about a connection with other people and about the kind of magic that arises when you start to ping pong with ideas and with concepts and with a great conversation. You start to discover things about yourself, about the world you live in.
Yeah, we choose our medium always in function of what we want to do and what we want to tell. So for some people, we are drawers. For other people, we're painters. For other people, we are digital engineers. It all depends.
That leads me directly to my next question, because you are making stuff, as you said. So one of the technologies or tools you use for creating your work is XR. You are storytellers, you combine it with different, you know, techniques, media, performances. But what drew you to using XR as a medium for what you wanted to do and what you want people to experience?
I think it's the promise of doing magical things. I think this medium is very much a magical medium where you can transform your experience of the world and your abilities of the world, you could say. It's also quite hallucinatory. You are really like changing your perception in a very like tactile and very immediate way. So since we like to tell stories and build like universes and create spaces of wonder, you very quickly end up wondering about possibilities of XR. And for us, we had been making theater pieces where we were using all the tools in like the magician's hat to create illusions where the floor would open up and under the floor there would be a giant lake not a real lake, of course, but you heard the sound. And when I came out of the hole, I was completely wet, for example, on stage. Or there was a little red ball that started to roll around on stage just independently, like magically, like an atom just flying around. Stuff like that, where we would be using physical things and try to create this awe, this wonder about altered states of reality. And then we wanted to create a world where not only us on stage would experience this magical interactions, and other people would just be sitting, looking at the magic, being passive, you could say, being observers. We wanted them to become participants in this magical realm, right? So that's when we started to create smaller scale theater works where we invited the audience to come along on the journey, to be physical, to interact, to give input. And then we really dived into this XR medium in theater.
Well, for us, it's not unlogical to do this because when we were students, we had a video art collective called Poractif, Active Port and Active Harbor, with two friends, with Christian and with Jimi Hendrix. And yeah, these guys, they traveled a lot. So we joined them. We went to Hong Kong. We went to Thailand. And back then, when we had to travel, we had to take a physical USB disk, like a USB stick. So for us, it's a big gap between traveling in the physical world with a USB and bringing the video art magic to the people. And now it's a little bit the other way around. You create something digitally, people upload it, they see it in VR. We join people together in this digital realm. So I think we also just love the magical part of technology. Technology has changed over the last 15 years, last 20 years. It's incredible.
You focus on, I think right away from where you started, even before XR, on collective experiences, so not experiences for individuals. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look around what's happening in XR, of course, there are social VR experiences. There are some projects on theaters going on, but most of the works that we see also on festivals are still like single user experiences, focusing on individualized experiences. But you kind of argue almost the opposite, that XR is a tool for group formation, for collective presence. Is that just your approach, or do you think there's still kind of a misunderstanding out there in the industry of the potential, the social potential of XR and immersive technology?
There's a huge, huge potential. But I think it also has something to do with the society itself. We live in a society that is highly individualized, and it becomes even more individualized every day. That's also the reason why I think that what we do, what we create, it resonates. A lot of people want to join what we do because you can feel some sort of hunger in society. We don't have, I don't know, like the big themes, the big narratives, the meaning of life. Religion doesn't play a huge part in people's day-to-day lives anymore. But we all want to connect. We want to connect with each other, but also on a cultural level with the society that we're part of. So if people join something that we make, and technology becomes a portal in which they can join through technology, then you can feel that people are, it's like this threshold to a new world or something, to like living tomorrow. They are unconnected and they have technology. And in a sense, it creates also meaning. We tell a story about the big teams.
I think what's also very interesting is the paradox between like the hocus pocus of new technologies and how I think we at least try to use them as a tool to recreate the wonder and amazement of the normal world, of the everyday world, where if you are a child and you discover, the laws of physics for the first time, you fall, there's gravity, there's stuff that burns, there's water, there's this natural elements, wind. It's actually quite magical, all this stuff. And we tend to forget this. And somehow, if you alter like maybe only small aspects of this reality, then you experience this completely anew. And then, at least for us, I think the technology is not about creating futuristic stuff that has nothing to do with our everyday reality. It's more about, yeah, recreating this amazement for what is reality and what is life and how magical it is to be speaking to one another and to have images in your head that are not real, but that are really vital in shaping society and the way we think and act in this world. So it's, I think it's quite crucial, like how we think and how we imagine things.
Now, I think we have an idea of the ideas behind your work. Let's make a bit more tangible and talk about one of your recent projects, Table Dialogues Wood. If I, you know, walked into that experience for the very first time without knowing anything about it, what would I encounter? What kind of journey would you invite me and other people into?
I'm happy that you use the word journey because it is a journey. Robert and I, we have a special vestimentary clothes, special clothes, and we tell the story. We actually say to the people, you join us for a hike. So we have these small foldable chairs, people take off their shoes, and we go on a hike in the liminal theater space. And while we are walking in circles in this theater space, the light dims, an audioscape starts playing, and we center around a sculpture, and the sculpture is actually some sort of teapot, and inside the tea is not ordinary tea. It's pieces of wood, birch, ginger, other strange ingredients. And actually, we made a tea out of various trees of life. But yeah, we of course know that it's drinkable, but a lot of people, they feel uncomfortable. They're like, how are we really drinking pieces, chunks of wood? So we don't say anything. The light dims. We all sit down. We drink the tea. And actually, we're building a bridge to go into this other dimension, into this other world. So I think we try to combine very analog, very tangible, real life stuff, the chair, wood, the tea, with more ephemerical stuff in the VR. So the bridge building is very important to get the sense of we're all in this together.
Yes. And then at a certain point in time, we bring out the VR glasses and everyone gets a headset on their face. And in the beginning, it's quite dark where you are in this new realm, in this digital realm. It's quite dark. There's only one little circle of light in the middle.
A glowing beam.
But then we instruct people to investigate this new world, like what's possible. Use your hands. Actually, before they got the headset on their head, I am giving kind of a good example, but it's almost like a choreography where I stand on a pedestal and I put on a headset and you see me do stuff. But the audience has no clue what I'm doing. They can only guess at what I'm doing. But it's quite
so awkward. It's beautiful because Robert does it in the beginning without saying a word. So he opens his hand, he looks around, he changes perspective. And you can really see that people feel uncomfortable because he wears the headset. So sometimes when he reaches out, he also doesn't see how far his hand comes. So sometimes he touches people by the nose or by the hairs. And when he does it the second time, then he starts saying phrases, like when he opens his hand, he says, to make a fire. And all of a sudden people realize, all these gesticulations are actually, it's some sort of foreshadowing of real things that you can do in the VR.
Yeah, we're trying to prep people to use their imagination, basically. First, you see it in your mind's eye, and then you will see it in real life. And we use hand tracking, so that's quite essential in this piece, that your hands are tracked and certain gestures of your hand are actual, like, interactive elements. So, like Frank said, if you put your palm up, you will see in the VR a flame in the palm of your hand. And you will be able, when you are in this darkness in the beginning, to light up this cave where you're in. So it appears you are in the cave, and there are cave paintings on the walls of this cave. And actually, the cave paintings are a bit like an IKEA instruction manual, where you can see what you can do in this world. What is possible, you can take a seat, you can plant a seat, you can climb a stairs up and down.
Yeah, it's so all part of this tutorial. But the cool thing is that we designed it to be a tutorial, but for the audience, it doesn't feel that it's a tutorial. Like Robert, his gesticulations feel almost like a dance. It's awkward, but also a little bit funny. And then when they're in the cave, they're in this, you know, like between hell and heaven, this world, very liminal world, but the cave paintings are foreshadowing. So in a way, people, it's like raising a child somehow. We're raising people, we're like guiding them into the VR world. And then when they're all in the VR, they...
Then we let them go, like with children at certain point. You need to let go. And then accidents can happen, but actually usually all
they,
goes
they literally
well
let go. Of...
Yeah.
Now, we don't want to spoil everything that happens, but maybe just two short explanations. One regarding the title and the format, the table dialogue. It's not your first project with this title. So what's behind the table dialogues concept? And then maybe just as a brief teaser for what's happening after you leave the cave and know what you can do in VR, because the name of the experience is Wood. And you already said it's kind of a hiking trip, but maybe just one or two sentences of what happens, what could happen after you leave the cave without spoiling too much, of course. But first, the table dialogues.
Well, table dialogues started, like, I guess, many XR projects during COVID time, but actually the roots are even before COVID. But this corona period really pushed us in this new direction to explore this medium. And first we created a piece called Earth, and later on we created a piece called Fire. Now there is Wood, and actually there's two more pieces that we want to create in this cyclus that are water and metal. And all these natural elements, they together, those five natural elements, make up the Wu Xing. Probably I'm pronouncing it completely wrong, but it's a kind of the Chinese
equivalent
of earth, wind, and fire. Like everything in the universe is made up of the dynamic between those elements.
But the cool thing with the Chinese is that it also transforms. So if you combine two, you get another one. So there is also communication between the various elements. And for us, it was important from the beginning that we somehow use technology in order to connect the audience. So in every table dialogues unit that we make, we have a different sort of connection. Like in Fire, people sit around a symbolic campfire and they are connected by some sort of spatial audio. So the fire starts to talk, but they can also time travel. They don't know it in the beginning with recordings. So they listen to recordings of previous groups and they can send their voice into the future with recordings that are being played with future generations, we call them. And Earth is more some sort of card game where people dive into a cosmos that they create, and the cosmos is very tangible again. It's black clay. So they use salt, chalk, black clay to make a real tangible cosmos, but it's empty. And with the use of a headset, they can dive into their empty cosmos and kickstart life. It's some sort of cosmogenesis, cosmology.
Yeah. And Wood is actually centered around the concept of the tree of life. Like, what happens when there's a big cataclysm, the world is completely destroyed by a disaster. But then there is this concept which comes back in a lot of religions and philosophies around world, of the tree of life. It's like this rejuvenating power where there's a little seedling that will always sprout again. And I think conceptually the piece is a bit of a question about technology. Like, is technology our best bet as our now contemporary day tree of life? Do we bet on technology to be our tree of life when things go wrong? Or do we need to kind of reconnect with nature and preserve nature to find our tree of life in the natural world? And I think those two concepts don't necessarily are much mutually exclusive, but there is this tendency, like people, Elon Musk and others, who believe that we will need to venture out in space to survive as a human species. So our tree of life in that sense is really like technology and technological advances.
But which is also a little bit fun, because if you look to all the old stories, all the mythologies, they need technology in order to proceed, to steer in a forward direction. But technology is also at the source of destruction, you know, like with the Roman Empire, they have new technologies, new ways of brewing, and then they brew lead into their drinks and they all go crazy. I know it's cutting corners here, but in a way, technology steers forward, but it also diminishes at the same time. And that's exactly what the play is about. The tree of life is also cyclical. So it's never an end point. And the cyclical vibe of the performance sits in everything. People walk in circles, the tea is being remade, even the virtual reality world is built like a circular onion. You have at the core the cave, and then you have the natural world, and then you have the world of the two moons, a moon in the sky and a moon below ground. So the circular motion is the key to understanding the play.
Yep.
So come and play, people. If you hear this, come and play.
Great. So I think that's enough to make people definitely want to do it without spoiling too much. Now, one thing that I really found fascinating is how much you thought about and how carefully you choreographed the transition into VR. So it's not just people enter the theater, you give a short intro, and then everyone gets their VR glasses. But there's a process, and it's kind of part of the play already, like the whole way into VR. Why do you think it's so essential to do this bridge building so carefully, and also the tutorial in a way that it doesn't feel like a tutorial? We say, okay, now you use your left finger and do this, and now your right hand and do that. But because it makes things for you more complicated, it's more to think about.
Yeah, definitely. I think there is also this tradition in video games where you usually would do a tutorial level and then you would play the real game. And nowadays games, traditional computer games, are also much more usually centered around, you just are dropped into a story. You don't really know what's going on and you will figure it out along the way. I think it's all part of creating this sense of actual immersion, because when you start talking about buttons and about screens, then you are not immersed anymore. It's like, I guess, when you start you watch a film and suddenly you see the play and the pause button again, you're thrown out of the immersion. So that's one very crucial aspect, I think, where you carefully craft this immersion even before you are actually in the VR headset. Immersion is much more than just seeing those visuals in the headset. It's the whole package. And I think that's something that tends to be forgotten sometimes, especially in XR festivals or in setups where there's just a VR headset and just put it on your face.
Yeah, it's not about that. It's just the same as there's this whole discussion about cinemas. Will cinemas disappear because we have all these streamings sites, Netflix and stuff? But if you go to a cinema, you're not only there to see the movie, you're there to be together with other people. Like I saw during COVID, like this Nicolas Cage slasher movie, very bad, but it has Nicolas Cage in it and the audience liked Cage. So I enjoyed the movie because I had all this, I don't know, like, you know, this synergy in the room and you can hear people laugh and breathe. And so I rewatched the Nicolas Cage movie a few weeks ago with my partner. And yeah, we turned it off after 45 minutes. Not because
it was not the same.
Yeah, because I built something in my mind. I built something like, yeah. Oh my God. And you know, it just build up and then with the blood. And now when I rewatched it, I didn't have the entourage. So you need the entourage. It's not only the bridge building, but the entourage makes it special. If you go drinking with your friends, And then you look back on this night, you're like, oh my God, I'm with the friends and we did this and this. If you're drinking all alone at home, then yeah, even if the liquor is good, then it's not the same. You need the friends. That's
or with vacation, eh? On holiday, that that cheese or wine was so exceptional. And then at home, you bring it back home and there you are. Yeah, it's not bad, but it's not like, wow, in
but
France when I was.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Absolutely. in the wine in France tastes better than at home.
Yeah.
Great. Another thing that you mentioned many times that now when you explain what you do and how you do things is that you want to make people feel awkward or uncertain, like when you give them the tea that they don't know, is that really drinkable? What kind of stuff is that? Now, most entertainment experiences, creators try to remove friction, you know, no irritation, it should be smooth and comfortable. But you create this kind of discomfort. Is it just for fun or do you think it has an effect on the audience?
It for sure has an effect on the audience. And I never realized it myself, but now that you ask the question, Robert will know it. I read a lot of like psychoanalysis, like Jung, and a lot of things that come back, not only in psychoanalysis, but also in like old rituals, you know, like from ancient Egypt, that is in a way you need to let go of your own ego. So you need to deconstruct your own confidence a little bit, because if you're too confident, then you sit in your ego. So in a way, if it deconstructs and you need to be like alert again, then you're in a heightened state. And in this heightened state, new things can, it's like opening the portal, broadening the door to enter. So in a way, if you're in this heightened state, this state of alertness, then new things can occur. So maybe we do it subconsciously, I'm not really sure, but it's kind of fun to put people in this awkward position, because then magical things can happen. People,
but it's a sweet spot also.
It's right? A sweet spot,
because
yeah.
If you make them too awkward, they will become kind of defensive and they will start to build like a wall of mental defense or like safety, you could say. But if they're just completely at ease, then they also don't have this heightened awareness. Like when you think you hear something, but you don't really hear it, and then you start to pay attention. And then you're a bit distressed by what is this that I'm hearing, like whatever in your house, and you hear a squeak and you cannot really understand the squeak, then you are in this heightened state of awareness, like, what is this? I don't really know. I should know, because it's a bit disturbing that I don't know.
It's the power of projection and suggestion. If people are uncomfortable, they think, this will happen. But then something else happens. And then they're like, huh. You know, this sweet spot is what we're after.
Yeah. You cannot, of course, achieve this, I guess, exactly right every time with everyone. But at least I think that's a goal of good art also. I think art that is really also just almost hurting or like pushing people away, it can be very valuable, but I think it's problematic in the sense that there's nothing that then brings you back in or reels you back in. It's like a pendulum motion, I guess, also.
No, it's also about letting go of control. Everybody wants to be in control all the time. If you're a little bit off, a little bit uncomfortable, then it's so nice to let go of control sometimes. You know, like, like going to sleep, you know? Because otherwise people, you cannot fall to sleep.
People not necessarily want to be in control all the time, but they have to be. So then it might feel good to let go on this kind of experience. Now, a lot of what you're saying is about giving people guidance through the journey, the experience. And I find when we talked in preparation of our podcast, you said that without this guidance, that people can consume a VR world very quickly if you just let them enter on their own, and then in 60 seconds they have the feeling they've seen everything, and then they lose the magic. I thought it sounded a bit like critique of some things that happen today in the digital culture, more broadly, not only in VR, that there's just so much just consummation and people and things that are made for quite quick consummation without really getting immersed into anything. Do you think that digital media is too fast today, leaves too little room for mystery, magic, slowness, and this kind of immersion?
Yes. And I think that putting a goal is something problematic, because we did a lot of tryouts, so we work iterative. So we do an iteration, then we test it with audience, we collect our feedback, we make a new iteration. And we did many, many, many dozens and dozens of iterations before we had our premiere. And we felt, especially with a young audience, like in Bruges, the city of Bruges, we did iterations on a digital festival. So the expectation, a lot of young people were there and they really had the expectation of, we're going to do a Robert and Frank VR XR game. So we got some sort of critique because they said, like, what is the goal? What is there to solve? I already planted seeds. Trees started to grow. I found out about an ancient language. I climbed the ladder. So I reached the maximum of all the possible things that I could do. What did I solve? What did I get? So people dive into our world with the expectation that they're going to get something, that they can win. And for us, it was really a wake-up call, because we want to connect people. There's no winning. There's nobody who can, you know, like celebrate that they're the winner and the others are the losers. So in a way, we need to take away the idea of getting somewhere. You know, like the whole wood experience is the thing. It's almost like this Taoistic principle, you know, like the journey is the end goal. And in our society, especially in games, everybody needs to win all the time and get somewhere. So it's kind of dangerous because, you can also see it in supermarkets the day of today. Everything is winning. You buy this one and you get your scratch ticket and you can win this. Yeah, you don't need to win everything or anything all the time.
Also, I think it's about this to go slower makes you more conscious, you could say, like you experience just more of the landscape when you are on foot than when you are in a fighter jet plane, you could say. If VR is the fighter jet plane of technology and you just go somewhere very fast, then you didn't experience anything of the landscape that you crossed. And it's a bit the same, I guess, with the gamification, where you have a certain goal and you're just trying to get to that goal as efficiently as possible, just to go to the next goal. Then you lose so much along the way of awareness of how magical it actually is to be in this cave while you're just in a dark theater space, and how magical it actually is to make fire with your hands and then walk through walls. Just this idea that you can walk through a wall is not a little feat. It's craziness. But you need to kind of build up this tempo where you have this heightened awareness, I guess.
And also it's an attitude in life as well. I have a 4-year-old daughter and she only realized it now the last couple of weeks, that grass consists out of individual pieces of grass. So all of a sudden she was like, yeah, this grass is green. And we were laying down on the grass and it's like she saw the real life resolution of every grass, how do you say, the grass thread. So she was like, oh my God, it's not just a green surface. If people, like, she's a child, but if you already have it in real life imagine in VR that not everything is a bit or a qubit, or, you know, like there's a world behind a world behind a world. And yeah.
Now, before we also come to an end of the experience that we are still somehow in with our discussion, I wanted to talk about one of your conceptual ideas that I really like. And it's that virtual spaces are not, you know, artificial overlays on reality, but more like dream spaces that have always existed, and that the VR headsets are just the portals to get into them. That sounds almost mythological. Maybe you can unpack that idea a bit.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of that. We were in our atelier, and we have other artists in the atelier. And one of the artists that we talked often with is Peter Aars. And he was busy with a project that was called Dreamer is the One Who Listens to the Dream. And the funny thing is that it's also a concept in Taoism, that, for example, the Tao, the road, it's here. It's always been here. And we, as humans, we only get a glimpse of it. It's like if you go to sleep, the dream has always been there. So there's one eternal dream, and the dream dreams itself. And humans are merely devices. It's like a radio that tunes into the FM or the AM frequency, and you get a glimpse of the broadcast, but you can never hear the entire broadcast. So for me, or for us, what we made in virtual reality, if you say the tree of life is in this virtual realm, and you have this cyclical motion of creation and destruction, then the audience members, if they participate in Wood and they go into this VR realm, they can only see one episode of creation and destruction, and another episode will maybe different. So they, yeah, it's really a philosophical thing where people let go of the here and now, and they connect with something, like with an echo that echoes for eternity. And I think in our play we created, I call it grandmothers. They're big sculptures, and the sculptures are visualized as some sort of people without faces, but their bodies consist out of stairs. And the cool thing is that if they step onto each other's, their staircase figures, they can climb onto each other and reach the sky. And these figures are part of this endless world. So they watch what happens. They don't really intervene. And they are like the dream figure, the dream grandmothers. And they watch over the humans who dive in.
Now, I know that you don't want to give the people who join the journey a goal, but maybe you do have a goal with your projects and the experiences that you create. So when people leave after, for example, the Wood project, what do you hope stays with them afterwards?
I think in the best case scenario, it's kind of a feeling rather than certain rational concepts or certain rational insights. I think it's this feeling of, connection, to say it once again, or this feeling of having shared something that was something a little like beyond everyday life, like a feeling of connectedness. Or I think maybe what some people describe when they have a good drug trip, maybe a bit the same feeling afterwards, that you go home and you still feel somehow connected to the things that you did in this other reality and the people that you shared it with. And maybe when you go to sleep at night, you dream not only about the people that joined you to the theater space or the drink you had afterwards, but also this grandmother dreaming figure, or this one person that was sitting next to you drinking the tea and having a funny face, or that those things kind of become part of who you are. Yeah.
Great. I think it's fascinating that you're using modern technology to create kind of very, in a good way, basic feelings that are kind of lost because of our digitized world also. It's like, as you said, Frank, with a technology that can lead to progress, but also to the opposite. Now, looking ahead, is there anything that you're working on or dreaming about right now? Anything upcoming from Robert and Frank that we can look forward to?
I was just thinking before answering your question that it's almost like an antidote of a poison, where you need a bit of the poison to be an antidote for the poison. Like with snake bites, you need the poison of the snake bite to treat the snake bite.
Cool.
It's like you need the technology somehow as an antidote for an overdose of technology.
That's a good image, yeah.
We are looking forward to many things we are making. Are they not making yet? We're doing a little bit of research about water. It's the new table dialogues performance that we will make. And we have, you know, like as artists, we sometimes have the impression that we're not 100% in charge or in control, because water, the last couple of months, we do many projects. We had a solo exhibition. We're making sculptures out of clay. And water is like this theme in all of these creations. So for me, it feels a little bit like the cosmos is foreshadowing stuff in our surroundings that may lead to the creation of the new table dialogues participatory experience. So I have the feeling that we're Boy Scouts that are tracking the way of water, you know, like the hints, we're following the leads.
And we're doing a few performances in our local botanical garden here in Ghent. Where we created a large-scale sculpture that is currently being overgrown by hop plants.
Yes.
And then, yeah.
We're making a ritual for an arts and science community in Leuven. And we have talks with people in Germany, in Erlangen, to do a new participatory play next year. So the pipeline is rather full.
Yeah. And the Belgian coastline also on the midsummer day. They celebrate the longest day, and we will do also a very long participatory performance on the beach, on the Belgian beach. So if you have to go on holidays to Belgium, I don't know why, but...
But a lot of people go to the Belgian coast. Yeah, a lot of Germans also, right?
Sure. And if not, then hopefully something happens in Erlangen, where I studied. So I would love that. And it's
yeah, shout out to Erlangen.
Absolutely. Great. So the water table dialogues are definitely coming. Thank you so much for those insights into your work. And I think, you know, we talked about specific projects, but I think there were many inspirations for other creators and that they could then learn from when they create their experiences, because you're already kind of so long into this that you have really defined and you experience what works, how and why you do stuff. And I think it's really helpful for other creators. So thank you so much for all those insights.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having
us. Maybe I wanted to add that if you're not locally where we are every month uploading a 1 minute video of our activities. So that's kind of our online ongoing little exhibition that is also digitally experienceable, you could say.
The artwork of the month.
Yes.
Perfect. We'll definitely include that into our show notes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
That was episode 79 of the New Realities podcast by 1E9 and XR Bavaria. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate it, subscribe, and share it with others. You'll find links in the show notes if you want to learn more about the work of Robert and Frank, or Frank and Robert. And the credits, 1E9 is a home for future optimists, for people who want to make the world better through new ideas and technology. Besides this podcast, 1E9 also includes an online magazine, a community platform, and events. You can find all information at 1E9.community. XR Bavaria was founded to support and grow the XR community in Bavaria, help advance the development and adoption of XR applications, and to increase the visibility of Bavaria as an XR location. You can learn more at xrhub-bavaria.de. This podcast is made possible through funding from the Bavarian State Ministry of Digital Affairs. Many thanks for the support, and hear you next time.